Mr. Speaker, the George of the United States.
Where the hell do these people come from? Why would you want some guy shaking his junk in your three-year-old daughter's face? What's the matter with you?
Now, listen in to George and his cabinet on Monday Night Roundtable.
Welcome to another edition of Monday Night Roundtable. George Sitari in studio with Steve Krause.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
Hey, Dakota Sawyer.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Don Larson is, he's missing. He's out in Arizona, hopefully rustling up some great interviews for Monday Night Roundtable. But we always have great guests, whether it's a local, national, state. We're going to have a great interview in the first segment of the first hour. We'll get to that in a minute. But I'm so happy it's Monday that I could go to the office and rest. Because, man, these weekends, boy, I had Medina County Friends and Neighbors. Friday evening, we had the Citizen Ninja Academy with Citizens for Free Speech. Then after McFan, we had that all day Saturday. Then we went out to Fast Eddie's. Had a great group of people there that came after the ninja training, including our good friend Bob France from Sister Station WHK 1420. And then yesterday, I had some running around to do. Unfortunately, some friends fell ill visiting with them. And, it's just time flies and always something to do. But happy to get back to the office today to rest up a little bit, then running around to a couple clients, and then coming over here to have Monday Night Roundtable. Steve, tell us about our first guest, but tell us how people could call to get into the roundtable discussion, get a seat at the roundtable.
Yeah, you can call in at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. And actually, Don's seat is empty, so you can call anytime if you want to chime in at 888-677-9673. Now, our first guest is going to be Tony Viola, and we've had him on the show a couple times. Matter of fact, we had him just a couple weeks ago, maybe right. 2 or 3 weeks ago. They were doing a rally down in front of the Ohio Supreme Court. Now, why the Ohio Supreme Court, you may ask? Well, that's a very good question. Well, they were having a rally down there because of the corruption in the Ohio legal system.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of shocking to believe that these Lady Justice is supposed to be blind and she's, blindfolded and holding a scale and, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But sadly, in Ohio, many of us, George, you were a victim and I was a victim and there's several others that we can start naming off, have been a victim of an unjust legal system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tony Viola is also one of those individuals. He has a landmark case against the FBI about tampering with evidence in a mortgage fraud conviction. Now, just to give you the high notes, he was taken to court in the state and taken to court in the federal. He won the state court and then lost the federal court because, well, they lost evidence. The FBI kind of was like, you ever see that game where they have the shell and they put the little pea under the shell and they keep moving things around? So anyways, now Yale University, the law students are arguing his case, and it's coming up this July 13th, 2013, oral arguments. So we're going to have Tony on not only to talk about the rally that they did over at the Ohio Supreme Court, because there is some very nefarious and very bad actor prosecutors working for the state of Ohio and also in the FBI. And how does this dovetail with what's going on at Capitol Hill with the DOJ and the fact that people like our great, the guy that was underneath Trump, what was his name?
Bill Barr.
Bill Barr knew all about Hunter laptop and knew it was real. And
Steve, don't you understand? Nothing. He was busy.
He was busy, but he was under the Trump administration. You would think he would want to do the right thing and follow the law.
Well, unfortunately, President Trump appointed quite a few schmucks to his cabinet, starting with his security advisor and his chief of staff, Mathis, and some other generals and deep staters all. And they weren't there to protect the business of America and the business of we the people. They were there to protect the interests of the deep state.
The deep state. So it seems like this has been going on for a long time. But, you know, we thought it was just on a federal level until they prosecuted me on a very local level. And now this has been a statewide level. Well, Tony actually spent 10 years in federal prison. And now it looks like he's going to get his whole case overturned because they lied and hid evidence in his trial.
Wow.
So anyways, we're going to talk to him coming up. But I know Dakota's got something he wants to share with us, some exciting news.
Before we go to Dakota, I just want, you know, we've been mentioning this the last 2, 3, 4 weeks. Whenever you listen to Monday Night Roundtable, have pen, paper, laptop that can take notes because we have events, meetings, authors, ideas, campaigns, votes, volunteerism, fundraisers, great guests with their websites, great guests who need help, on and on and on and on. So you need pen and paper to write down these websites, these telephone numbers, these people, and you need to circle back because we want to be like Tom Z. He has a great podcast that comes out every Saturday. It's anywhere from 1 to 2 hours. It's actually getting longer and longer because there's so much, but he always has at the end of his ideas and information that he puts out 2, 3, 4 action items at the end of every podcast that he has. Call your congressman, go to this fundraiser, go to this rally, call this person, that legislator, on and on and on. Because, frankly, Steve, I'm tired of people, we'll be polite and say complaining and complaining and complaining.
Whining,
complaining. They don't do a damn thing. They think getting information is all they need to do. No, you need to get information because, you know, we need to be very well-versed in all the issues, topics, our Constitution, our love of liberty, freedom, our founding fathers, current issues. You need to be well-versed, but you need to get out there, talk to people, new people, old people, you know, get people not to forget to vote on August 8th, on and on and on. So, having said that,
before Dakota comes on, because what Dakota is going to talk about has to do with our upcoming event and our guest, and then he's got a clip to play. But I want to dovetail on what you just said, and I can't take credit for this. There was somebody on the radio that I was listening to coming in who said it, but I think it's apropos. He says, you know, the question was asked, well, what's your outlook? Are you optimistic or pessimistic? He said, well, I'm always optimistic. And then he said this. He said, my job is not to wake up the sheep. The sheep will always be sheep. My job is to wake up the lions. And I thought that was very good. So here at Monday Night Roundtable, we want to wake up the lions. And we want to get you activated.
Right. Absolutely. All right, Dakota. Activate away.
All righty. So our upcoming event is taking place next Thursday, 10 days from now. It will be taking place here in Cleveland, Ohio, and at the Embassy Suites over here on Rockside. This is going to be a fantastic event. It's going to be the 2023 General George S. Patton Dinner.
First one.
It's the first annual. It's the first annual.
You can be at the first annual.
Exactly. Make American Union PAC history, being at the first annual 2023 General George S. Patton Dinner. We have a great lineup of speakers. Those include our keynote speaker, former Congressman Lee Zeldin. He was the Republican nominee for governor of the state of New York. He's probably one of the most successful Republicans in the past 30 years. In terms of trying to beat out Democrats in New York. He also, in addition to getting running for governor, helped four congressmen in upstate New York win their congressional races by helping people turn out to vote, giving those four Republican congressmen a victory and sending them to Congress to that was basically our Republican majority.
To be part of that slim Republican majority.
Well, I would say we have the House because of Lee Zeldin.
We do. We do. Mm-hmm. And so he will be coming to give a keynote speech. It's going to be a fantastic event. Our second speaker is going to be he should have been Speaker of the House, but he is a current state representative. His name is Derek Marin. We've been talking about him for months. He will be coming to give a speech at the George S. Patton dinner. So we'll be having State Representative Derek Marin. And our third speaker will be Lori Cardozo Moore. She's the president of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. And since this is our primary focus on this fundraiser is school boards and school board races. She did hold a training here in Ohio. I believe it was back in May, was it? Or May or April?
It was April 30th, I believe.
Yeah, it was April. It was the end of April. She held a campaign school for school board races and how school board candidates could win. And so she had that. So she'll be coming to speak, giving a presentation. Giving us some hope and optimism for our school board candidates this general election cycle. So we're hoping to have a great.
So this is being done by Monday Night Roundtable, right?
This is being done by the American Union PAC.
Okay, because you kept saying we. I didn't know. You know what do you mean we?
Well, this will be hosted by the American Union PAC, and people tickets are $140. People can get their tickets at www.americanunion.us. Again, that's www.americanunion.us. It's the first thing that pops up in your screen to go buy tickets. And so we'll be having a fantastic event, great speakers, great lineup, and we'll hopefully, be able to help our school board candidates in this election cycle. So go online, make sure you're writing down the website, americanunion.us, and buy your tickets tonight.
Right. There's about 1,000, 1,500 school board races going on. We've identified 50 to 100, as many as we could, help finance, fund, strategize. Because, and again, we have, good candidates in a lot of different areas. Some are, majority good guys. But, again, there's a great need for funds because you can't win a campaign on buttons or monopoly
exactly.
money. So that's we're doing this. Also, Dakota, tell our listeners what the other big project that the American Union PAC is working on.
Yeah, so we're working on central bank digital currency down at the State House. And that we have House Bill 163, which is the Save the Dollar Act. It's sponsored by State Representative Jennifer Gross. And she is gracious enough to, we got to sit down with her, talk to her about this issue, and she, wanted to put it into legislation. So, Robert Owens, myself, Alex Newman all sat down with her, and we talked about this legislation and this issue, central bank digital currency. We drafted up a bill, and she introduced it into the Ohio House, which is now House Bill 163, which sits in the Financial Institutions Committee. And she is going to Jennifer Gross has a companion bill that's coming up that's going to focus on gold and silver, making it legal tender here in the state of Ohio and creating a gold bullion bank. We'll have more details on that as the legislation it will be introduced. But we're primarily focused on central bank digital currency. We've had a legislative luncheon in May at the State House. We had many prominent Republicans and Democrats attend our legislative luncheon in May. We had 75 people attend in the atrium of the State House. We weren't expecting 75. We were originally expecting 35 to 40 people, and we just had it. I started to notice that we were having more people than expected, so we had to get 5 more tables of 8 because it was already set up for 35 people. So we had the great turnout, and people were listening attentive for the whole 2 hours. Mm-hmm. This lasted for 2 hours. Alex Newman spoke. Jennifer Gross spoke. We had a great number of speakers, pastors, people from all walks of life giving, kind of why this matters to them.
You didn't have to go down to the cafeteria to get extra bologna sandwiches.
We didn't, no. Unfortunately, we handed out all the food and that was it. So, but we had a great event. great 2 hours mm-hmm. of tentative, great information being given. We promoted the New American. We gave out issues of the New American to the legislators so they could read up on the issue and what was being talked about. We gave them a lot of different policy papers and stuff like that to educate them on central bank digital currency, and they very well loved it and were very informative. And so what we've done right now is we're hosting town halls across the state. We held one with Jennifer Gross. The first one was held with Jennifer Gross, the primary sponsor of the bill. We had 40 people in the room, a little back room of a pizza shop. We ordered some pizza for everybody. We held this, big town hall. People were asking questions, getting information. And that's kind of the goal, is to educate and inform people on the issues that we're promoting. And so that's what we did, is we educated. We wanted to have them to have that information for them. We're going to be hosting another one next month with State Representative Brian Lorenz. He is a member on the Financial Institutions Committee. So we're going to continue hosting these town halls on central bank digital currency, and we're going to continue to educate people on the issue and educating representatives and their constituents.
Right, and these are two great issues for the American Union PAC: education, school board races, and central bank digital currency. Even leftists who like big government, I don't think they like that much big government, mm-hmm. and they see the privacy implications and everything else. And so these are the two things, the American Union PAC. And again, we're doing this. We set up a PAC because when you start advocating for legislation and writing legislation and supporting town hall meetings and different things, it's best to have a political action committee. And, you file your reports, cover all your bases, and you don't have to worry about getting in trouble with the powers that be. You say, you're promoting legislation, you're promoting candidates. Here at Monday Night Roundtable, we mostly promote ideas, issues, concepts.
Common sense.
We do the clarion call like we are with our next guest, Tony Viola, in a few minutes. But just getting back to the American Union PAC, Steve, these are the kind of headaches we have to have. Well, American Union, what are you, for unions? It's American Union as in order to form a more perfect union. Duh. So, our people have lost their minds a lot of times. It's like, I can't believe you're supporting unions. No, we're supporting the union.
the federal union.
The more perfect union. So we even got to, segue into nonsense like that.
Yeah, we do. But, we have a short promo video that the producer's going to play. But before they play that, I kind of want to give a little synopsis on the promo video. So in the first, in the first segment of the promo video, you're going to hear two clips of left-wing political pundits attacking Congressman Zeldin for being pro-Second Amendment, pro-Constitution, pro-life, all the things that, Republicans would support, and they basically demonize him for wanting to tackle crime, wanting to solve the homelessness crisis in the state of New York. So all these things make him, this evil person. And then it segues into a debate between Lee Zeldin and Kathy Hochul, where he said, they're coming. Why people are fleeing the state of New York is because the government is coming after their pocketbook. They're coming after their family. They're coming after their community. So that's why people are fleeing the state of New York. And then you'll hear clips from the movie Patton. Because it is the George S. Patton dinner, the General George S. Patton dinner, the great phenomenous. Fabulous movie, Patton.
George C. Scott.
Yeah. You'll hear clips from that introductory speech at the beginning of the movie of him talking about, America's never afraid.
You took out all the swear words, right?
I did. Okay. I made sure to clip out. I made a radio version, and then I made a social media version. And you can definitely tell the difference of the two. But you'll hear clips from Patton. Then he goes on, for Congressman Zeldin talking about different issues, talking about crime, talking about, the Democrats' failed policy on immigration, why we're having this such border crisis, how it's affecting the people of New York and affecting the country, nonetheless. But, he's a great speaker, and we're glad to host him here in Cleveland this coming Thursday, next Thursday, July 20th, at the Embassy Suites. So, Mr. Producer, if you can play that clip.
denier. He is a mini Trump, climate change denier. He wants to take abortion off the menu for New Yorkers as well. He voted against gay marriage. So I'm concerned.
And I don't think
I'd be happy to tell you.
Well, what's interesting
plan.
To me.
No,
he voted against the ban on semi-automatic weapons.
Of course he did.
And homicides are up. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, having been a prosecutor.
You ask me, why does New York lead the entire nation in population loss? Because their wallets, their safety, their freedom, and their quality of their kids' education are under attack.
There's never been a nation greater than ours. Never a people more resilient than ours. And never a future for America more promising than ours.
Americans love a winner. And will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost and laughed. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to Americans.
Aren't going to go down to the border where this is happening every day. Well, the border is being brought to Washington, D.C. We all know.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
Think that if your two Mexican cartel drug smugglers busted with $1.2 million worth of crystal meth, that you should just be instantly released on cashless bail.
Now, there's another thing I want you to remember. I don't want to get any messages saying that we are holding our position. We're not holding anything. Let the Hun do that. We are advancing constantly, and we're not interested in holding on to anything except the enemy. We're going to hold on to him by the nose. We're going to kick the hell out of him all the time. And we're going to go through him like crap through a goose.
All right, good little clip. We're going to play that in the second hour and as well. But our guest has been holding so patiently, but I'm certain he's enjoyed our little soliloquy. So, Steve, why don't you introduce our guest and then ask Tony what's going on?
Yeah, our guest right now is Tony Viola. He's got a landmark case against the FBI, and it has to do with tampering with evidence. I've heard that somewhere before.
You're lying.
In a mortgage fraud conviction. And it seems that Tony has successfully secured the assistance and or representation by the Yale University Law School itself. So without further ado, Tony, welcome to Monday Night Roundtable. Glad to have you back, and give us the update. What's going on?
Well, gentlemen, thanks for having me on. It's kind of hard to follow General Patton, but I'll do my best. I appreciate you having me on. Two things. One, we had a rally 2 weeks ago in Columbus, and we can talk about that if you want to, because you mentioned that.
Sure, absolutely.
But let's talk about Yale University Law School, okay? The government, in my case, first of all, I was sitting in my office one day when the FBI kicked the door in and said I stole $46 million and raided my company and said it was the nation's largest mortgage fraud case. And I was prosecuted in both federal and state court at the same time. And it turns out that the government used this task force building, which was in a different location, as a way to play games with evidence. And now they're totally busted doing it. And so let me give your listeners just an example of some of the games that the government played. And this involves the incarceration of innocent people, okay, by the government, by the FBI. So I salute your efforts to, as you said earlier, activate the population and say we've had quite enough of this nonsense. So what the government did was, you know, they went on TV. They said I was this big criminal. I stole $46 million from J.P. Morgan Bank. The bank had never said such a thing. They never accused me. So they're stuck with this outlandish tale that I owned a mortgage company and that I was siphoning all this money off. It turned out that they realized I did not own a mortgage company. I did not steal $46 million. So in our country, prosecutors and law enforcement are unwilling to admit a mistake. They start with a conclusion, and they've done this to many people. I'm not the first guy. Tony's a criminal, or Steve's a criminal,
yep.
And then we're going to work backwards from a conclusion. Well, I'm one of the people crazy enough not to plead guilty and told them to take their indictment and stick it. And the amount of misconduct by this prosecutor, Dan Caceres, and Mark Bennett, who's finally being disbarred, it's unbelievable. So in this court case, I sued the government after I won a second trial. So I was initially convicted and then exonerated when the task force office manager, a young lady named Dawn Casella, says, hey, they're hiding all this evidence here. And so I win a second trial. So for a decade, even though I had proved that I was innocent at a second trial on the same charges, I was not released from prison, even though I had proved my innocence, because the federal government said, well, whatever happened later in state court doesn't matter. And we had nothing to do with this task force.
Okay. So, stop right there okay. for our listeners.
Yep.
So you were found innocent in a second trial in the state court. The yep. federal court found you guilty. And even state though court. You were innocent and it was proven in court, a state court, that you were innocent, you still languished Correct. In prison for 10 years?
10 years because Mark Bennett, the federal prosecutor, prosecutors will say anything and do anything to preserve a conviction. They will never admit that they're wrong. So the tale that they told was, well, gosh, the state trial and this task force, you know, we had nothing to do with it. So we started litigating this case. And the documents that the government had produced or that we possessed completely contradicted what the government was saying in federal court. So for instance, the FBI said, we're not involved with any task force. We had nothing to do with the task force. Yet the FBI had issued multiple press releases touting the fact that they were involved in this task force. And so there's an example. Then there's another instance where the government claimed not to have anything to do with it. The federal government said they didn't have anything to do with it. It turned out that the task force was funded by the federal government. So it received federal funding and it was staffed by federal officers. Yet in the case that Yale ended up taking over, the government kept making representations that were demonstrably disproven by what? Nothing I said, the government's own records. So the notion that the task force didn't have any evidence and they never had to search there was undermined by, for instance, receipts where the FBI packed up 19 boxes of evidence from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Cleveland and sent it over to the task force. So even though we had these documents, they're still lying in court and saying we never sent any evidence to the task force. So at some point, it just became a bridge too far. And some judge named Stefanos Bibas, who was appointed in 2017 by President Trump, he said, enough. How can the government be making statements and pleadings that are contradicted by documents that Tony keeps attaching to his pleadings? This doesn't make any sense.
Hey, Tony, out of curiosity, what kind of business did you have that they raided when they did raid you? You said you weren't in the mortgage.
I was actually a real estate broker, and we actually had realtors, you know, with the yard sign, not financing. We were not a mortgage company, but the FBI was in our office with guns. Where are the mortgage files?
So it was just mistaken identity.
And then cover later two things. Yes. Dan Caceres was having an affair with this witness, and in order to protect her, they decided to have her become a witness for the government, and they said, well, you can testify against Tony. She said Tony was at the mortgage company when she was making false statements, but I was not the Tony. It turned out that it was a different Tony, and the sloppiness of these prosecutors is unbelievable, and then that was really the predicate for all this misconduct, because mm-hmm. they start with a false conclusion that I'm in the mortgage business stealing millions of dollars. And then Caceres is having, which he's done this for 30 years, by the way, in all kinds of cases.
Right.
In a romantic relationship. And then they start doing crazy things so they don't have to throw the case out.
Okay. Tony Viola is our special guest. We're going to take a brief intermission, a soft break. We're going to, you know, we are a capitalist after all, so we have have to have our capitalist income, our commercials. But Tony, stay on the line because we'll bring you back. And Tony Viola is our special guest, and we're talking about corruption in the judicial system right here in Ohio. Stay tuned, Monday Night Roundtable.
Hey, Bob France here, and we're in studio once again with Mark King from Keeping Medicare Simple. Mark, are there a lot of bad actors out there breaking the law and making Medicare phone calls?
Unfortunately, we've seen an increase in that activity this year, and that person who is calling you to get you to change your coverage. He or she is not looking out for your best interest necessarily. They are calling you just to make a commission.
Mark, in addition to those illegal phone calls that people are receiving, they're also seeing Joe Namath on TV and a whole bunch of other people. Can we trust them?
Well, Joe Namath is not your friend. If you call that number, you are giving permission to Medicare insurance agents around the country to call you.
Even though most of those agents around the country may not know what the specific limitations are in Ohio.
Right, and that's the great part of dealing with us. We know the local plan.
You know the local plans, you know the local restrictions, and that's why you want to call Mark King instead at 440-832-8936. That's 440-832-8936 or log on to KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. There are those in Washington who want the IRS to take more of your hard-earned money. Are you tired of being the perpetual cash cow for every scheme, unreasonable program, and for all the fraud, waste, and abuse in our system? Well, good news. I can help. George Sitari has almost 40 years of experience helping people like you keep more of what you make. It makes no sense that the more you make, the more they take. Let George help you keep your money away from the government bureaucratic waste and in your pocket. Call 216-651-1120 right now and schedule your free consultation today. Instead of a victim, you'll be the victor. With many success stories, George helps with tax planning, estate planning, financial and business analysis, and more. The new tax law has many ways to save money with retirement planning, accelerated depreciation, up to 20% exception of net earnings, and so much more. Call 216-651-1120. That's 216-651-1120. You earn it. We'll help you keep it. That's George Sitari, CPA, 216-651-1120.
This is Lisa Woods from Medina County Friends and Neighbors, and I'd like to invite you to our meetings on the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at the Thirsty Cowboy on the corner of I-71 and Route 18 in Medina.
Swamp, fake news, racist hats? Are you afraid to believe anymore? Well, let me tell you of one brave soul who, like David, slew Goliath. The true story of one man's fight against greed, corruption, and insatiable ambition in small-town Ohio, Checkmate reveals why passion and integrity are rare in the corridors of swing state politics. If you want to hear the truth, how the swamp operates in Ohio with all the political corruption in real time, get Steve Krause's tell-all, true life story, Checkmate, One Man's Fight Against Political Corruption, available on Amazon. As a newly elected state representative, Steve takes you behind the scenes, behind the closed doors, and rips back the curtain to expose all the lies, the deceit, and power-hungry gamesmanship. Checkmate reads like a TV drama, but it's not.
Once you start it, you won't be able to put it down.
Checkmate, One Man's Fight Against Political Corruption by Steve Krause, available on Amazon today.
Hey, good evening. Back on our first hour on Monday Night Roundtable. We'll take Tony Viola, our special guest, to the top of the hour because he has so much to talk about. Hey, Tony, a couple questions here. These two, and we just got a couple calls in confirming that Dan Caceres is, it's a family show. But anyhow, Dan Caceres is not a good guy. My question, you mentioned Caceres and Bennett have both been disbarred. And if that's correct, if I understood correctly, are they disbarred because of this case or something else or multiple things?
Well, Caceres has not yet been disbarred, although there's a whole bunch of ethics complaints against him for doing a myriad of things. For instance, engaging in outside activities that were never approved by the government. So he's being paid as a prosecutor and he's supposed to get permission to engage in outside activities. And he's not. He's managing financial affairs of various paramours and other things. So he's not yet been disciplined, although we hope that that happens. Mark Bennett his up to his eyeballs in misconduct in my case and 1,200 other mortgage fraud cases. There's $20 million of restitution that's been collected that's never been sent to the supposed victims that supposedly lost money. And there's a whole myriad of false statements that Mark Bennett has made in a variety of court proceedings. The government started investigating Mark Bennett, believe it or not, because he was engaged in epic sexual misconduct inside the prosecutor's office. And after 25 years of sexual impropriety and sexual assault, finally an intern blew the whistle, and the inspector general started investigating and found out all sorts of misconduct that Bennett committed, and he was fired. But the disciplinary council refused to even charge him with all of the misconduct the government's other investigation found, and they refused for us to speak to them about the misconduct in my case. And the government now blames, in this Yale University case, they now say, well, Mark Bennett told us that he gave you all the evidence, and so they're blaming Bennett for now they're admitting that he made false statements in my case. So we have a prosecutor who's caught engaging in epic misconduct that affected me and this task force, which went after well over 1,000 of our fellow citizens. And yet the disciplinary council investigators wouldn't even speak to us or the family of Dawn Pacella. Dawn was the task force office manager, worked for Bennett and Caceres, and she was found dead in her apartment under very mysterious circumstances as she was about to testify at my second trial about prosecutorial misconduct. So disciplinary officials are essentially engaged in a cover-up, and that's why we went down to Columbus a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, this is outrageous. This is a cover-up that you won't even charge him with all of the misconduct that a different investigation found, and you won't even let us speak and provide documents, including our attorney, Kim Corral, who's a very reputable and very prominent attorney here locally. She said, well, Tony, maybe if I write a letter, I would like to go down as an attorney. They wouldn't let her speak to anybody in the disciplinary council.
Wow.
So what kind of investigation is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the legal profession has, you know, many licensed professions, whether doctors or accountants or whatever, they always like to circle the wagons and act like there's nothing wrong, and they don't want to discipline their own. You know, they're into. At one time, I was on the optical dispensers board, and the big thing was, the investigator came in and you weren't wearing your name badge. I mean, they're good at nonsense, Mickey Mouse crap like that, but big stuff. They circle the wagons and either sweep it under the rug or act like it never happened. Now Tony, I was reading, I think it was Steve sent me, it was either a press release or something. Tell me about this Yale Law School oral arguments. Are these law school students? But it sounded a little bit more, not just like students, but it sounded more almost like the Innocence Project kind of thing that Yale is promoting. Or is it just students? Or who are these group of Yale Law School teachers, professors?
Well, let me tell you, when you're a prisoner in jail, and I was there for a decade, you dream that some large reputable organization will validate your claims and take the case. And that's what Yale did for us. And Yale was looking for three things. One, a case with a very developed factual record so they don't have to go start investigating from scratch. We have epic misconduct. Two, they're looking for a case where they really feel the facts and the law are very much on our side, and that a favorable outcome would not only help me, but it would be a precedent that would be set across the country, maybe studied in law schools. I guess that's the dream. But also because this involves a task force and 1,200 or 1,100 other cases, if the feeling is that if the task force was engaged in improper evidence handling, that this may reopen all these cases. That's what they look for. I am extremely fortunate because we have two professors at Yale. We have a myriad of students. We have a law firm, an attorney named David Ross at a law firm called Wiggins & Dana in New England, which is an enormous law firm. And they are all working together. So yes, it does give the students practical hands-on experience. And I think the students were shocked by this kind of misconduct. They're reading textbooks and they're, you know, studying things that we all studied when we were younger, that, you know, in America, it's better to let 10 guilty men go free than put one innocent person in jail and all this rubbish that nobody actually implements in our government. So they were really shocked by the amount of wrongdoing by the government. And incidentally, 5 years ago, the FBI admitted lying about evidence in my case after that judge had appointed a different law firm to start looking into this. This whole case got shipped to Washington. So Mark Bennett and Dan Caceres couldn't control this litigation anymore. And the Justice Department started looking in this and said, my gosh, this is crazy. And they actually threw those guys under the bus and said that there was false statements. But even though the FBI admitted lying, and even though they were ordered to produce all the records they lied about, they still haven't. Now, could you imagine if one of us was ordered by some court to provide, you know, that maybe they raided and they couldn't get some document, or we possessed some document that the court or the prosecutor's office wanted? Could you make 5 years of excuses and lollygag around? I mean, this only involves the incarceration of innocent people. So when the FBI admits lying, what happens? The answer is nothing. I mean, the judge in Pennsylvania, the district court judge, did nothing. Oh, how much time do you need to, you know, correct the record? What do you mean they lied about evidence? I mean, so if I lied, you could hear them, you know, the pompousness of them, you know, whining about the rule of law, and I'm obstructing a federal investigation, and we're not at fullest extent of the law, we're going to prosecute Mr. Viola. But they've done it and gotten away with it. Now, Yale stepped in, and they put together a masterful legal brief detailing all of these false statements that the government has made over a number of years and all these documents that support what we're saying. So, for instance, the FBI agent claims he listened to some improper voice recordings that Dawn Pacella was ordered to make of our trial preparation, but he's saying he didn't produce them to us and can't produce them now because he sent them to the task force building. This is a joke. I mean, how can the government dispossess evidence they don't feel like producing? This is why innocent people are in jail. So this FBI agent, Jeff Kasuv, and Bennett and Caceres, they just said, well, just send it over to the task force, and then we can say we don't have it. So it is. It's a Monty Hall justice. Would you like the evidence behind door number one or door number two or door number three, or would you like, or the shell game, which you guys are talking about?
Oh,
ridiculous.
Tony, I want to interrupt you. This is Steve Krause again, our special guest, Tony Viola. I just want to set the record straight for all of our listeners. Mark Bennett was a federal prosecutor, but Dan Caceres is a state prosecutor who got his start in Erie County in Sandusky, Ohio, under the tutelage of Kevin Baxter. And Kevin Baxter is a very questionable
I'm sorry, did you say Kevin Bastard or Kevin Baxter?
Baxter, yeah. It's a family show. Okay. But he's still there, and he's been there for decades, and he was the treasurer for Chris Redfern, who I ran against back in 2014. Right. He's the one who told me that I was going to be he's the one who told my campaign manager that I was going to be indicted before the election. So the dirt that you're talking about has been going on both in a federal level and a state level for a long time. Dan Caceres not only is a state prosecutor, he's one of the guys that Governor DeWine, then Attorney General DeWine, used to prosecute, I believe unjustly, Peter Beck, former state representative Peter Beck. And Dan Caceres, just for our listeners to know, is still employed by our current AG Dave Yost.
Wow.
Right, which shows you what a joke that these nominal Republicans are. Dave Yost is a joke. I mean, he's saying he's a Republican, yet Caceres in local politics, and he's been a North Royalton city councilman until he lost last time, and I hope I had something to do with it because we sent so many postcards and put up so many signs all over North Royalton. But the fact of the matter is Caceres is buddies with Bill Mason and Frank Russo and Jimmy DeMora. And if you go through his campaign reports, he's like a true machine Democratic. I'm talking about Caceres is a real Democratic machine politician. You mean to tell me that Dave Yost, who's supposedly a Republican, he can't find one attorney in the state of Ohio who's a Republican who he could replace Caceres with? By the way, Caceres prosecuted the mayor of Niles, Ohio, a guy named Ralph Infante, claiming that he was allowing people to retire and then be rehired the next day at full salary. But Caceres retired and then was rehired by Dave Yost the next day at full salary. So Caceres is double dipping. He's getting his full pension. But Caceres prosecuted Ralph Infante, who's sitting right now in Grafton Correctional Institution, okay, because God forbid you anyone engage in this behavior. Caceres is incredibly reckless. Bennett, too. They put all kinds of crazy stuff in writing. They actually put in writing that they knew their witness was lying at my trial, which under the law, I know we don't follow that, but Under the law, if a prosecutor knows a government witness is lying, they have an obligation to withdraw or correct that false testimony. They haven't done it. So when Yale Law School starts looking at all this documents about, you know, the FBI has the stuff and then sends it to the other building, where, by the way, other documents claim that the FBI staffed and ran it. So it's like putting it in one pocket or the other pocket. It's all illegal. So maybe Yale is skilled enough to present this to a court well enough. Now, luckily, it's in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, because I was in prison in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. If this lawsuit was filed in Cleveland, Don Nugent and Pam Barker and all the judges in Solomon Oliver, they'd have thrown this thing out 10 years ago. The only reason we have any chance is because these knuckleheads ship me to every jail in the Midwest, and I happen to be in prison in Pennsylvania, and the only forms I could get from the law library allowed you to initiate a lawsuit there. So we actually have some chance, because Bennett, Caceres, the U.S. attorney here, they have no say-so in the outcome of this case, because it's long been shipped to Washington, because the powers to be in Washington took over the case once they started seeing how crazy it was.
So
they delayed it for 5 years.
Again, our special guest is Tony Viola, and we're talking about corruption both on a state level and on a federal level. Your case is this Thursday. Let's just talk about that for a moment. Okay, now they've filed a brief. Yale Law School has filed a brief for you, and you're going to have oral arguments this Thursday. What do you think it's going to look like, and what is the outcome that you're hoping
for? And where's the venue? Which court?
It's in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia.
It's 10 a.m. on Thursday, and on my website, freetonyviola.com, if you go to the blog, it's got a link. If anybody wants to watch it live, or it'll be archived on the court's website, and we'll also tweet it out and make it available to everybody.
And so, is that like a one-day hearing, or is that multiple days, or how's that going to work?
It's legal arguments in a court of appeals, so it's not taking witness testimony like in a trial court. It's an appellate court that is determining whether or not this case should be concluded or move forward. And the interestingly, about 2 weeks ago, the court issued an order directing the FBI to essentially explain why they didn't search the task force for records. I mean, you're putting documents there that are federal documents, and then you're saying you don't have to produce them, and it's contrary to law. So we're optimistic. The task force itself is claiming, well, we're not involved. We shouldn't be involved in this. We had nothing to do with the federal prosecution, but yet they haven't disclaimed or argued about the authenticity of any of the documents we have, which is that this building was federally staffed, federally funded, and was integral in all these cases that were prosecuted. So what do we hope happens? We hope for three things. One, we want all of the records in my case, which they created a media circus. There's no reason to hold back or hide or redact anything, okay? There's no ongoing investigation. So first of all, I'm tired of spending 15 years litigating to get records that the government was supposed to produce in 2008. That's number one. Number two, we want a finding of fact or a court order that says that what the government has done is improper, because that will allow me and many other people to have their cases reopened. And thirdly, we want this court to order an investigation into what happened to Dawn Casella. This is absolutely outrageous that Bennett and Caceres wired her up after I was indicted, had her pretending to be a paralegal, supposedly helping me with my defense. She's really recording our trial strategy sessions and then playing it for the prosecutors. It's akin to me bugging the U.S. Attorney's Office. Completely illegal. She's found dead in her apartment under mysterious circumstances. Nobody thinks that's unusual. 26-year-old lady who's, you know, agreed to come to court. And so we want a full investigation into what happened to Dawn and accountability. Now, she's deceased, so we say Justice for Dawn, or justicefordawn.com is the website about what happened to her. But it's really a matter of accountability. These prosecutors are very powerful, but they should not be permitted to engage in this type of misconduct that caused the death of this brilliant young lady who, for goodness sake, worked in their office. To treat somebody like this and to do something like this to a young lady because your case sucks, because you didn't know what companies I owned, is ridiculous. If these guys would have done their homework, they would have figured out that I was a realtor, not in the mortgage business, or they could have called, and I would have given them all of our records and had them, they would have welcomed everything, and I would have been happy to meet with them. But Dan Caceres and Mark Bennett like publicity. They want to go on TV and have press conferences and raid my company. We had pontoon boats at the ready in the Cuyahoga River, SWAT teams. You don't want the realtor swimming to Canada. You got the boats. I mean, it's a joke. You know, we're a bunch of realtors sitting in an office drinking coffee, having muffins. It's not exactly like we're a grave threat to the public. So we hope that the court does those things. I don't know that they will, but we certainly hope so. And we hope there's a precedent in the future so that this kind of abuse of power in these task forces does not continue, because it affects many, many people. Cases are routinely prosecuted with federal state cooperation, but those task forces should not be used to engage in misconduct or hide exculpatory evidence that proves the innocence of people.
Hey, Tony, we're our phone lines are lighting up. If you got time, we'd like to take you into at least the next first quarter hour of the 8 o'clock hour. Do you have time
to
stay?
Okay. Whatever works for you, gentlemen. Yes,
okay, because we have phone lines lighting up here. We have Tim from North Royalton. He wants to add to discussion. I think we
Yes, good evening, John. Hey there?
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
All right. I just, before you go to the hard break at 8 o'clock, I'm an avid listener of 2020. I catch Monday Night Roundtable as often as I can. I'm the main show I listen to, and where I heard Tony first was on What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders. And he went into great depth several times. I've heard him on that show. I've been in North Royalton since 2010, and I'm well aware of the all the goings on and the misgivings of a lot of the corrupt people in Royalton, especially the Democrats. And Caceres is cancer, and Bennett is a cancer, and they need to repent or perish.
All right. Well, they have the little
for a long time. And if people's lives have been ended because of their misdoings, there needs to be a day of reckoning. And I think we need to start in every small community's got secrets,
mm-hmm.
especially with NOACA in Ohio and what's going on with NOACA and all this corruption and all these different leaders. It's a dog and pony show. We need to call them out on it. There needs to be a day of reckoning for those that are doing wrong. The judges are corrupt. The prosecutors are corrupt. Half the lawyers and everything. Just the whole thing stinks. And good people should have a say in this country, especially starting in the small communities, in your county, in your state, and at the federal level. There's going to be a reckoning for sure come January 20th, 25. Hopefully it's the way I want it to go. And then we need to start in our communities and our school boards and work from the bottom up and the top down.
All right, sounds great.
And I'll be watching with Ernest.
All right, yeah, watch the live stream on Thursday. Hey, Tony, what time is that going to be?
The court ordered the oral arguments to start at 10. We assume it'll start around then, give or take. So people can watch them live, but if people are unavailable at 10 a.m. on Thursday, it'll be by the end of the day, it'll be on the court's website. And we'll also make it available on the free TonyViola.com website. So we'll make it available to everybody. And we're very excited to have Yale Law School and these brilliant
Absolutely.
People arguing for us.
Hey, Dan, we are coming up on a hard break. You probably hear the music here. So we're going to hold you over for the next 15, 20 minutes after our break. This is Monday Night Roundtable. George Sitari in studio with Steve and Dakota. And our special guest is Tony Viola. And he'll be right back with some more interesting news to secure liberty and justice here in the state of Ohio.